Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. The dry weather is still with us, so it's all systems go. This week I'm joined by Martin Merrick, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan. No sign of Grassland Agro's John O'Loughlin this week. Runs for cover when the tough gets going. Poor old Clare. First up, it's the quick fire round. Martin, you'll have to take Adam's quick fire. Before I go there, I see Harry Kyle, the Chancellor here, sent in a text. Hey folks, here's to the finer weather that's here and keep it coming. Could you give a shout out to all the scraggy hairy farmers that are doing fundraising for a great cause in Crumlin Hospital? There's a link for fundraising on the Instagram page of the Hairy Farmers 24. Love the show, good man Kyle. The big shearing job is on the 27th of April. Darren, I might talk to you about that there later. Right, folks, quick fire. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868-36-6465.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Okay, Martin, a couple of quick fires in here for Adam, obviously, but I know you'll answer them a lot better than Adam would. Ask Adam, what are the solar options any good for fencing an outside farm that has no power? I'd love to run a wire around it to help allocate grass better. Solar options, Martin.
Yeah, they're a good option. It is possible to get a connection there for a solar fencing without having to get the full ESB connection, Jack. You know, it depends on if there's a transformer nearby or that. Solar option is 100%, and as well as that, it's TAMS aided. So it's there for the farmer to apply for. They get the 40% back, or the 6% if they're a woman farmer or a young farmer.
Okay.
No, definitely a good option.
No issues. Nice one. Thank you. One second. I have two more here for you. Hi, all. I'm planning to purchase a new slurry tanker and trailing shoe under TAMS. I know I can buy once the application is in, but I would prefer to have the approval in my hand. How long should approval be if I am successful in the current tranche closing in September? Do you know? Love the show. Thanks. He wants to purchase, Martin, a new slurry tanker and a trailing shoe under the TAMS. He hasn't said when, and he's in this current tranche closing in September. So how long do you reckon before he gets approval, or do you know?
I don't know, Jack. My crystal ball is broken there the last couple of weeks to know exactly. But in fairness to the department, they really are moving since after Christmas there on approvals. And the LESS, which is the low emission slurry spreading, that has been the quickest to approve because there's less paperwork associated with that. No plan permission, farm yard sketches, any of that sort of stuff. So as regards when he's going to, he'd be looking maybe before the Christmas, Jack, to have that gotten received.
Here we are the 1st of May and he won't have it back, as you say, maybe just before Christmas. So it's a 2025 purchase, though, if he's going to wait for the approval. He's saying he wants it in his hand.
Yeah,
Or
look,
she.
I wouldn't see any. There's been no issue so far. In the last three tranches, Minister McGahan-Loughlin has said that all eligible applications are going to go through. I can't see why there would be a reason. There's been far less applications in tranche three. I think it's only about 3,200 due to the shorter time period. But look, they'd be doing well to get it this year, Jack.
Okay. No, put it on the list for us, Auntie. Okay, last one for you, Martin. Can you claim VAT back on rotational grazing infrastructure with a combination of timber posts and pigtail posts? Thank you. Talk to me. VAT back on timber posts, Martin.
So we talked a little bit in the last couple of weeks about flat rate farmers that can claim VAT back on essential spend. So essential would be fencing, but temporary fencing isn't essential, Jack. So any, we say, timber posts or concrete posts, whatever might be permanent fencing or permanent sheet wire, barbed wire, that's all fine. You can claim the VAT back on that. But as regards pigtails or plastic posts or reels, that kind of stuff, no, can't claim the VAT back.
Okay, excellent. Back to you in a couple of minutes, Martin. Darren, a couple of quick fires in here for you. I was Harry Kyle's. I'm calling him Harry Kyle, like the chancellor that gave on the Crumlin Hospital. Do you know them guys, Darren?
I do, Jack. Yeah, there's a good few of them involved in, say, the Tullow Sheep Group, the Borough Sheep Group. I think there's 70 or 80 farmers that have grown. They've grown beards and hair for, say, 3 months, and they. So there's a few shady looking characters going around Tullow.
Don't
So
I need
there
big
isn't,
bags to collect it all up, so yeah.
exactly. But it's a great cause. They did it, I think, it was 6 or 7 years ago. Where they've a target of raising 10,000 for Crumlin Children's Hospital, special unit up there. So I think it's. Did you say it was this Saturday? I think in
27th. Oh yeah. Didn't realize
yeah.
it.
So they have a good Facebook page. If someone wanted to donate, they could even Google the, say, online for the just the hairy farmers.
Excellent.
I don't think the department will give them any few quid, Jack, for the sheep shearing. I think they were hoping to get a few. Say this, if a few of them were short in yours, that they could get the shears in. And I think, but I'd say that's probably out of question, I'd say.
We'll put in the query sheep welfare scheme series right. Let me see. Ask Darren, where is the best place to find out what my stocking rate is? I was trying to find out what my stocking rate is because I'm lowly stocked, but I don't know if I'm under the 130 or not, and I don't want to buy fertilizer until I know. Darren, where's the best place to find that out?
Yeah, so agfood.ie, Jack, for if you're just a bovine farmer. So there's a couple of complications here. So if you're just, say, cattle, dairy, suckler, beef, it's fairly straightforward. You can log on to agfood.ie, go into your nitrogen and phosphorus statements, and it's last year's figures that's been used. So it's last
Okay.
year's stocking rate dictates
So the
what rules
average
you
for
have to follow
2023.
this year. Exactly. So
Okay.
you'll be able to get that average figure. And that'll dictate what you can do this year. Now, if you're a mixed farmer that has cattle and sheep, the unfortunate thing about it is that you won't have a figure there on the department system. So what you'll need to do is take a rough figure. If you had an inspection in the morning, the way the department work out the stocking rate on the sheep side is the average of numbers. So you put in your monthly numbers, you take an average of that, and then they multiply it up. So a lowland ewe, the nitrogen excretion rate for her is 13 kilos, mountain ewe is 7 kilos, lowland hog is 6 kilos, and mountain hog is 4 kilos. We have a piece in this week, and we're planning to do a piece more in the next week, Jack, because there's a lot of questions on it. But that's the sort of
Okay, that's
the
the quick fire
mechanism you have
answer.
to
Like that's
follow.
grand, yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Evening all. Question for Darren. In new sheep scheme, do I need to maintain your numbers across the year?
No. Once you can have your payable number, once you can complete the action, so if you have 80 yaws in, you can, if you're down for shearing, you shear your 80 yaws, you can then sell off some of those.
Looking at the new sheep scheme, I shear for a few people locally, and I'm not a registered business. How can I give them the receipt the department is looking for?
Yeah, we have a similar question in this week, Jack. We've questions and answers with the department in. So in the case like that, if the department inspected, say, the farmer who that man has done or that lady has done the shearing for, if they paid by check, the check stub will do, or a copy of the check, or if somebody was, say, Sheeran themselves, if they have a wool receipt, will do. So they don't per se need that registered headed, okay, as long as it can be shown that there's one that the task has been done. There's more about that in this week's paper as well, around taking photos to prove Sheeran was done as well.
Okay, yeah, you have a nice piece on it there this week in the Print Job. Darren, last one here, sorry. Are all approvals out for Acres? I haven't got mine yet, but I think I saw it in the journal. They are out, so I'm afraid now my application wasn't eligible.
No, don't worry, that listener shouldn't be worried yet. There was 2,500 released first. I think there's another couple of thousand since. They're working their way, Jack, through that 9,000. So I think it'll be a while. Well, so going on the previous experience of Acres, I wouldn't just be worried yet, because I think there'll be a few weeks yet before all approvals are.
Excellent. Okay, don't panic. You could still be in the Acres pot. Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a few minutes. Aidan, the first piece here is almost a comment. Handling sex semen myself, I'm worried. So obviously the breeding season has started on this farm, Aidan, and he or she is using sex semen. Should he or she be worried?
Yeah, no, there's no need to be worried, Jack, once you're using the right protocol. I mean, the only thing to be concerned about is that you only use one at a time. That's the best advice for sex semen. Make sure you thaw it out correctly. So it goes straight from the goblet into the thaw, and you can get those electronic thaws, Jack, which are very useful. So the temperature stays the same. You're not checking the flask every, and adding water and just subtracting water to get the temperature right. So those electronic towers are a couple hundred euro, but they're well worth the investment. And then get into the cow then as quickly as possible, but appropriately. There's no panic. Take your time. Don't be stressing over it. It's fine in that regard. The timing of AI is important, obviously, with sex semen. So you want to be 14 to 20 hours after the onset of heat, which is standing heat. The first time you see the cow standing to be mounted, then 14 to 20 hours after that for heat. But there's no panic. There's no, it's a more, you see sometimes, Jack, people handling straws, AI technicians and farmers, and they're very, flahulak with it all. They're pulling out two or three or four or five at a time, and they're shoving the cones down their into their wellies and wellies and down their neck and all the rest.
Yeah.
And you can do, look, you have to keep it warm, so down the back is fine, but only one at a time, not four or five.
Great. Excellent.
We'll touch on that again later in the show. Aidan, question for Aidan. Tillage farmer beside me has offered to grow a crop for me, as I have nearly all silage reserves depleted. What are his thoughts on maize versus beet? Tillage farmer also talked about Westerwards, but I've never heard of it. Thanks. Siobhan Walsh always gives out Aidan when I mention, or when Westerwards comes up, she says we're years trying to get that out after putting it in.
Westerwards is a type of grass. It's a kind of a high, it's like Italian ryegrass, basically, Jack. So it's a very fast growing, vigorous ryegrass plant, but it doesn't last that long. So it'll die out after three or four seasons, I suppose. If it even gets that long. But sometimes some of the plants will stay on for a long time. And even some fields, Jack, that were of grass fields that were in Westerwolds years ago, you still see some Westerwolds in it. It's very obvious. So the tillage farmers, a lot of them don't like it because it's hard to get rid of it at a time. It comes back again. Those grass weeds come back. But I suppose you do get a lot of yield off it. It's grass, and farmers are used to handling grass. So it's, they're set up for it. It's high yielding. Now, the quality of the silage wouldn't be brilliant, but it does give you a bulk. You need to cut it three or four times in the year. Yeah. The question, maize or beet, it depends on your setup. Depending on yields and all the rest, beet will yield higher than maize, but it's more expensive to grow. So on a per ton basis, it's slightly more expensive than maize. Neither of them are ideal, to be honest. They're very low.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both expensive, and they're both low protein feeds. So they're really suitable only when you're feeding grass. So that's at the shoulders of the year. Otherwise, you're putting in an awful lot of additional protein into the diet, which is expensive. So that's soybean meal. What's it costing at the moment? It could be, it ranges from 400 to 700 euro a ton. It's very expensive stuff, and even higher than that. Yeah. The other thing about the beet is that you're probably not going to get the beet delivered until October at the earliest. And at that stage, it's not really much of a buffer for you, for milking cows, because it's gone late, whereas you can harvest maize in early September and you can feed it straight away. So it's there as a buffer in the autumn if you want it. And you have, I suppose, the infrastructure in place to feed maize. It's, a bucket or a grab will feed it out. Whereas with beet, it needs to be washed, it needs to be chopped. Cows can get sick in it. You need to build it up slowly. There's more issues with beet, I would say, but it, you know, it's a fantastic feed provided it's the diet is balanced.
Yeah. Okay. Good food for thought there. Last one, Aidan, for you on the quick fire. Hi, my grass paddocks are 7 years old and have taken a hammering last year. Any tips on how to revitalize them without the plow? Would a crumbler roller or tine harrow be any good? Thomas in County Down. Talk to me, Aidan.
Seven years old wouldn't be mad old, you know, in terms of a reseed. Like, so they should be getting at least 10 years out of them. Now, some silage fields will need to be reseeded after 7 or 8 years. I'm generally against any kind of mechanical intervention to that, you know. I mean, it shouldn't be needed, really. Okay, some fields got hammering in terms of they were poached and all the rest. And if there's very little ryegrass left in them, then you're looking at a full reseed. You know, there are some options there in terms of giving it there's tine harrow, like a Einbach machine, which is just loads of tines, and then you can drop seeds on top of it as well and give it a rolling. But it, you know, if there's no weeds there, that might work. But if there's a lot of weeds there, you're really better off going in reseeding. But rolling, tine harrowing, all that kind of stuff, for me, it's probably not really all that beneficial. I would say make sure the P's and K's are correct in the soil, and even if they are and there was damage done, additional phosphorus will help soil to heal. It'll help grass to tiller. So really, the existing grass needs to tiller. So tight grazings, regular grazings will help that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Thanks, Aidan. Back to you in a minute. Martin, you had the dream gig this week, the Pedigree Palace in Monaghan. Simone and Niall Maguire, top class shed.
Yeah, you were talking there about the farmer putting his slurry tank and triple bear on his Christmas list for Santy. So that's going to be on my list this year now, Niall and Simone Shed. I think he'd be on a lot of Pedigree farmers' list if you want to see it this week in this week's paper. It's top class. Look at it, it's a bespoke fit out. It's not something we say you'd see in most commercial farms with that. Now, there is a three bay slat area with a lieback on it, but that's not a creep area. It's a lieback for bulls, or it's a lieback for commercial show cattle or whatever. Like, and then you have the your pen in there. So it's not a big herd by any means, but there's the availability of four calving pens simply because they're using a good bit of embryo transfer. And if you're putting in four or five embryos in one day, then four or five heifers are all going to calve within a day or two of each other. So they just need the capacity there for doing it. And in fairness, they've done a class fit.
It's a 5-5 bay, but it's and it costs $74,000 plus VAT. Like, so now they might get a bit of a grant back on that, you know, but it's still expensive for the relative number of heads it's carrying, like, or it's housing, like, it's fair to say. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. If you're looking on that basis, but as we said, it's not a commercial person shed at all. It's for pedigree units. Like, and you can see there in the first bay there, there's a special non-scratch pen there for bulls getting them prepped for sale and everything like that. You know, it's really built to spec for Niall and Simone and their needs. So, and I think it's something that a lot of pedigree farmers would benefit from, having something similar to that style of shed. We're seeing farmers still utilizing outwintering pads there for pedigree bulls, and that kind of, how many of them would pass an inspection, Jack, is very debatable. Like, if they have the proper collection there of soil water and that. So something like this might be an option for farmers going forward.
Martin, you're also, you have a focus this week on infrastructure and farm infrastructure. So good bit of I suppose people beginning to kind of know that stock are getting out of sheds and getting out into the fields. They're effectively trying to kind of catch up on a few bits and pieces. But one piece that just jumped out at me was new farm roadways. Sorry, it's a point I didn't know. New farm roadways, they can be approved under Thames.
Yeah, it was one of the kind of surprises there last year, Jack, that new farm roadways are eligible for Thames 3A. Now, there's a couple of sticklers in that. Number one, it's a permanent fixed structure, so it has to get planning permission before you do any work. Because it's a permanent structure, you can't start any work before you get your full permission from the department on it. There's a reference cost there of €24.90 per linear metre.
Yeah.
That is irrespective of whether you are supplying the materials, whether you have your own digger, tractors, whatever. It doesn't matter. You have to just, you know, €24.90 is the reference cost for it.
Okay.
It's not available, Jack, as I've listed in the article there, for any resurfacing or rejuvenation of older roads or that.
Right.
It's just
for a new farm roadway, like.
Yeah.
Is the planning thing, I wonder, would that hold it up big time, Martin, if I went looking for a new farm roadway and said, how long could I be waiting?
Look, Jack, it's very dependent on each county council, right. You're probably talking at least 3 to 3 months anyway, could be as long as 6 months.
Right.
But in reality, Jack, and it's the same thing that's happening with farm buildings, farmers are putting up these farm sheds or building roads and all this, and they should be looking for planning permission whether they're going for a grant or not. Like,
right.
It's all fine and well putting up a shed or something like that, but
yeah.
If issues arise down the line,
right.
Particularly with dwelling houses and things like that, I'm hearing of certain farms that are putting up a shed, might be blocking sunlight or
blocking
view from some dwelling houses nearby, and there can be really big issues. And when solicitors' letters get involved, it gets very sticky.
Yeah. Come here, I also see in that piece there, you're getting digger hire up the west there for €40 plus VAT an hour. You're doing well, you're not overpaying them.
We're giving them a check going out the gate, sure. So it makes it all the sweeter. Look, it's possibly, it's one of the things that we get maybe for a bit of a cheaper rate around here, around €45 for a 13-ton digger. Possibly a little bit dearer on the baling side and some of the other things, but it's one of the things we get value for down this side compared to
you. You have plenty of supply and demand, I'd say, to be honest with you. Coming here, just in terms of ground conditions, I see one of the reports there in Grasswatch is Sean O'Donnell up in Mayo, and he's talking about cutting silage on the grazing ground again, like a piece he didn't get grazing, and he's talking about a split first cut. There's a lot of guys only gone out this week with the 3 bags of cut sward, and hoping to kind of cut kind of late May, early June. Martin, is that the kind of run of the ground up around you as well?
Seems to be the case, Jack. I was spreading myself on Saturday last, and there was ample other fertilizer spreaders on the go that day. It was really the only first chance that a lot of people got. Sean Diver in Tullamore Farm as well has spread this week, and he's done exactly that, 3 bags of cut sward, and hoping to go with a cut date of the end of May, beginning of June there, hopefully. Ground conditions are well on the way. They're not 100%. A sticky spot is still a sticky spot.
Yeah.
Go around it as opposed to go through it.
Yeah.
But no, ground conditions really have improved. As Darren said earlier on there, growth is still a little bit sluggish to take off. Part of that is because we have these big heavy covers that, you know, they're slow to rebound once they're grazed. And if they're sitting there, we'll say if you have a cover 2000 that's been sitting there since last October, well, that's not really going to grow much until it gets grazed out. And we always say it kind of panics the grass, Jack, to get grown again.
Yeah.
A lot of farmers of a normal year would find that the paddocks that they graze at the beginning of February, by the time they're getting to the end of the first rotation, they've caught up with the last of that first rotation towards the end of March, beginning of April, thereabouts.
Yeah.
It just kind of seems to panic grass. And because all that hasn't been done, and because we're grazing heavy covers, and because we didn't get out fertilizer, it's all kind of a snowball effect, and it's kind of leading to this lower growth than we would like to see.
Thanks, Martin. Darren, there was one quick fire I didn't share with you. I better share it with you now. I shear yours myself and compost the wool. How can this work for the sheep welfare scheme? Doing your own shearing, Darren, so no paperwork, and not selling the wool. So no paperwork there either. How can this work for the sheep welfare scheme?
Yeah, we had a very similar question, Jack, to that from a hill sheep farmer that was selling the wool for five, said it was offered 5 cents a kilo, and they seen that there was a better value in putting into the dung heap, which you'd argue, yes, there is. The department have come back and said that in such a case, Jack, there's a couple of things that can be done. One is that you can take a photo of the sheep being shorn. That now the photo has to be, say, either dated or, I suppose, a lot of smartphones now, Jack, they'll be right, have the capability timestamping it. Exactly. Or if it was a case that there was an inspection, the department would see that the sheep have been shorn. But that's only going to come up, I suppose, if it is. I'd be sort of along the lines of having the photo anyway, just in case that you had an inspection further on down along the line. But that's generally the answer there.
Okay, so it can work but as you say, take your photos if you can, and at least it'll be something there if you got an inspection, albeit that they might see the sheep and all that. But still, yeah, excellent. Darren, I was looking at the camera at the mart, and there was a sheep sale there featured Blessington, and I saw Colio's there. Was it 250, 250 euros? Now they were monsters of sheep, but they were over the 100. They were over the 100. Like, but they're cheaper. Some money, like.
There'll be some shearer, Jack, that'll be happy that he's not turning those over in a few weeks' time. So they will.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, no, look, I had a good chat with John Doyle there from Lesson to Mark, like, and he was saying that there's a couple of things at play, like why those, I suppose, big numbers of yours are coming into the Mark. One is the price, as you say, like, it's a huge price. So if you took, a ewe being killed in the factory, if we put her in just for round figures at €4 a kilo at 45 kilos, like, she's coming in at 180 euros. Now, you'll get 430, 440, but she's still only coming in less than 200 euros. So those heavy euros, the mart is the place for them. The other thing that I suppose was apparent on the sale was the amount of individual lots sold was unreal. So, like, it was a real sign that any problem yore is just being drafted out and being sold to take advantage of the high price and also to generate a bit of cash flow.
Because they're right, aren't they? Like, you know, I mean...
Well, like he made a good point. Like, he said, on one hand, you're looking at he had lambs, say, making the equivalent of 10 euros a kilo down there. He had hogs selling for over 220. And everyone talks about that, and it's great for the sheep industry. But some of the farmers that are selling the cull ewes haven't sold a lamb or a hog since maybe last September, October, November. And some of the ones that did sell, maybe hill cross lambs, wasn't that well remunerated. So, like he said, cash flow is tight in some farms, and this is a great way of being able to sort of generate it as well. Like, so, as you say, Jack, it's a fantastic price for them heavy cull ewes right across Europe. The demand for lamb, mutton, whatever type of sheep meat you want to call it, is fierce tight.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, it's move now. Is it move now? Like, there's nothing to give them a let's say, you know, they're probably at grass, but let's say that, you know, if they got a month or 6 weeks, they might kind of flesh up a bit more. Like, they'd want to be fleshy, Darren, going in.
But there's also a good demand for store ewes as well, right? Because see, there's a couple of things at play. Some of the people that have sold ewe hoggets because of the high prices that keep stocking rates or just to keep grass eating and keep the farm right. They're either going back now buying some store cull ewes, or they're buying yours at lambs at foot. So there is been a nice sort of boost in both of those at the moment. But like, even some of them, say Cheviot Light or Cheviot, say Suffolk Cross animals, roughly around the 60, 65 kilos. They're getting into 90 euros, Jack. Like, you wouldn't, if it was a thing you were tight on grass, which a lot of farms are this spring, you'd be moving those along, like, you wouldn't be keeping them. Now, lowly stocked, you can keep them and have a chance of putting them in. But if we're to look at last year's sort of market trends, that as the year went on and numbers started to increase, that say cull ewe price started to follow a seasonal decline or to wean back a bit. So I suppose it's up to every farmer to look at their own circumstances. But like, the overarching thing I'd be saying is to look at your sales outlet. Like, if you have those big tanks of yours, like, the mart is the place for those at the minute, Jack.
Right. Excellent. Speaking of the trade, Darren, Lambs are up a touch again this week, are they? Are they hitting the magic 10?
Yeah, knocking on the door. Now, there is some, say, so agents are obviously, we don't usually talk about agents because we generally talk about what farmers are getting themselves. But agents are above that, and you can see that clearly when you see the prices being given in March sales. Like, but there is, say, farmers that are handling big numbers that are knocking on the door now. Like, they say the base price or the base quote yesterday's paper was around the 970 a kilo mark. If you were a producer group adding on another 10 or 20 cent bonus, you're knocking on that door, 10 euros a kilo. There's some lambs that are getting a confirmation bonus to some of the producer groups that would be probably just hitting that. So we're very close to the one, I suppose, maybe new or novel sort of thing this year is that the differential between lambs and hoggets has disappeared. Like, if I go back to this corresponding week in 2023,
yeah,
the hoggets quote, base quote, was 7 euros a kilo. The spring lamb base quote was 7.70. If you look at the, say, the quality assured spring lamb quote for this week, it's around 9.60, 9.70. The hoggets quote is around 9.50 a kilo. So that differential has disappeared. We talked last week about some heavy spring lambs that are probably being looked to be killed under hogger terms at the moment. I think a spring lamb at 21 kilos at current prices is maybe 205, 206 head. And sure, your hogger is 23 kilo carcass is coming between 225 and 230. Like, so you can see why there is a push maybe to get those payment terms. But like, what I've been saying, I've had a good few calls on this because obviously there's a differential as well between what the factories are quoting and what the top prices are going. And like, for anyone that's struggling to negotiate, the good thing about it is the March trade is there. Like, oftentimes when we get into June, July, August, there might be the factory and March, there might be much between it. But the demand is so intense at the moment that the March is a great option, Jack.
Excellent. Darren, any Anthony Wilde down in Tullamore Farm? Like, I presume everything's, you know, as much as possible, everything is at grass. What's the story on the sheep side? Any issues?
Yeah, I make a comment that everything is at grass. The last of the cows and calves were out this week, Jack, a lot later than what obviously is planned, like what everyone is experiencing this year. So they'll be starting breeding. They're literally going from be turned out to starting into the breeding season. Look at what can be done. On the sheep side of things, he treated the oldest batch of lambs this week for coccidiosis. We had a bit of a problem last year where July, August time, or maybe it was the end of June, start of July, lambs' performance started to dip. Lambs were getting sort of dry in the wool type of thing, and we were doing fecal egg counts, but we did check the coccidiosis, and it came back in a high enough count. Now, not mad either that you'd say you had a coccidiosis outbreak, but just enough to knock performance a bit. So he thought there was lambs that all dispatched, there was a bit of scour, not the sort of the Mahadira scour, and we're keeping an eye out for that as well. So he treated them, say the heaviest batch of coccidiosis, and he'll probably treat other ones when we're looking at the Mahadiris dose there in a week or 10 days time. So there's a fair ball of work in probably
getting
the
them
first
open.
Week. But in the first week of May, what we'll do is 40-day weights, coccidiosis, the Mahadiris, click them as well.
Okay.
So like Sean and say, where are you? Where is the proverbial we when he's looking for help? Or,
But it all comes together.
Exactly. It all comes together. And
but the coxy treatment, Darren, what's that? That's a drench into the lambs, is it? Once off?
Drench into the lambs, check residual activity, and it'll protect them there. He's also started doing the cast down there as well, because, sure, as people know, when you get coccidiosis issue on the farm, it generally lingers there, and you're sort of into that treatment sort of program.
Okay, yeah. Darren, listen, I've held you long enough. Just one piece that came up a touch in the quick fire, this whole piece around phosphorus and the allowances piece and farmers not knowing the stocking rate and all that kind of thing. It is, I suppose, and you making the point in an article there this week, it's not new, this whole piece of the allowances piece, but for a lot of farmers, they're being monitored and watched tighter now this year, and with the fertilizer register, etc., and that kind of thing. They're looking to get their ducks in a row.
Yeah, and look, to call a spade, Jack, for an awful lot of farmers, they join up to the fertilizer register was done by an advisor, so they weren't maybe tuned into the implications of it. And what's coming to light now, it's most when you ring up your co-op or call into the co-op and say you want 4 ton of 18, 6, 12 or whatever it be, the question back is, are you sure that you have an allowance to spread that? Which is the first question that a lot of farmers, even though it's been written a lot, it's only when it becomes, I suppose, maybe apparent or the challenge is there that we start to look at it. So like there's three, I think, things, Jack, that if we were to just say now, so over 130 kilos organic nitrogen, if you have no soil samples, you have to assume index 4 for P, which means you cannot apply any phosphorus. So a lot of Aidens lads will be used to this because they are dealing with this for years. If you're under 130 and you have and you don't have soil samples, you have to assume index 3. And then obviously, Jack, the ideal is where you do have soil samples, because there's a piece of management notes this week is that if you have index 1, index 2 soils, you're going to be able to take in a lot of phosphorus, but not to forget that you have to account for phosphorus coming in concentrates. So a ton of concentrates is generally 5 kilos of phosphate if you don't have some documentation to say otherwise. And on top of that, if you're importing slurry, you have to take account of that as well. So we'll do a bit more on that, Jack, because there's a good few queries coming in next week.
100%. Excellent. Darren, thanks for that. And chat to you next week. Aidan, I smiled to myself when I saw the line tin or shaggy looking cows. I was thinking of the lads getting sheared. Tin or shaggy looking cows, go switch them to once a day.
Yeah, sure. There's plenty of them out there, Jack, I suppose, after being inside for the last, whatever, since, in some cases, since September, you know. So there's... they haven't been getting grass. They're still in the winter coats. It's almost as though, Jack, we've kind of missed the spring, you know, in terms of the cow's body, like, you know, her system has missed the spring because she's gone from her winter diet straight into almost summer conditions in the last couple of days. Now I know it's cold enough at times, but so the challenge there, Jack, is that because we're now at the end of April and almost into May, we're starting the breeding season. So the key thing is that we want to ensure that we're going to get as many cows back in calf now as possible. And while this has been a difficult spring, a stinker of a spring in many cases, really we want to limit that to this year and not to have a carry-on effect into next season. So putting all our efforts possible into making sure we get as many cows back in calf as possible is key. So a couple of things there, putting those thin, shaggy looking cows, as I say, onto once a day. It might be 10, 20% of the herd. Now, you know, by right, Jack, they should probably be on it weeks ago, you know, but it'll at least help them. Some farmers have them on weeks and months, you know, so we're not saying that they haven't. That's one of the steps, but I suppose making sure then that your heat detection is up to scratch is another key one. And that's because if cows are thin, they're a little bit under body condition score, and they're under a little bit of pressure, it's possible that they might have weaker heats. So the detection levels need to be greater in order to pick those cows up, because if they're not submitted, they definitely won't go on calf.
Aidan, I mean, in terms of the once a day cows, what are guys doing? Just taping them on the tail, or are they separating them into a separate group?
In the main, Jack, just taping them on the tail. Look, ideally, they should be in a separate group because they won't be doing the walking in and out of the parlour, so it'll help them as well. But like, you know, that's not practical in most farms. So just tape the tail. Don't milk them in the evening. They're still getting fed. They're still getting the kilo or 2 kilos or 3 kilos in the parlour, but they're not getting milked. And if it does happen, Jack, that you accidentally put the cluster on, leave it on. You know, don't take it off again, because that'll be worse for them. So leave them on. Doesn't matter if they're milked a few times. But tape the tail or tape the leg, either or, it works well, and the cows will get adjusted to it, and you'll see them change pretty quickly.
Breeding, before we finish on the breeding side of things, obviously sick semen and maiden heifers, a lot of people especially using it in maiden heifers. I know obviously a lot more are using it in cows as well, but the sick semen piece in maiden heifers and the treatment protocol, a lot of them, the few that I was talking to, they have a treatment procedure. They're using a cedar, and I think you had a program there that didn't include a cedar, am I right? In terms of a synchronization program for fixed time AI using sex semen on those maiden heifers.
No, if it's fixed time AI, you have to use a cedar or a fridge. There's no getting away from that. You can, your alternatives without a cedar or a fridge would be just using prostaglandin on its own, which is the PG injection.
Yes.
And you can time that twice if you want, you know, to get. But it's too late for that now in the main. But right. That, you know, no, you have to, if there's fixed time, you have to use a cedar or a prit. And that's adding to the cost then, you know, and there's about five different yardings or, you know, injections or different things needed during that protocol. It's an 8-day cedar, so it goes on over 8 days, and then you're timing that, you're eyeing them then on a specific time. And that's important. It's not just the day, Jack. It's the time of the day is also critical for all those injections. And if you're planning to do it, you need to consult in advance with your AI technician to make sure that he or she is available to do it on that time. And generally, they're in the middle of the day, so you're not. They're less busy in the middle of the day. Obviously, they're busy mornings and evenings doing cows. But you know, a lot of them now, Jack, won't be, or they're up to their neck in AI, and they don't want to go at heifer. You know, they just won't have time for it. So. Mm. You know, you need to make sure that they're there and available. And if the numbers are big, you might involve two or three technicians to come in and work together. And that's happening as well.
Job done. Aidan, you're also writing this week on clover, and I see oversowing clover. You mentioned oversowing. I thought you were dead set against oversowing clover.
No, I wouldn't be dead set against it. I just say there's more challenges with it, Jack, and there's more management required of it. But it does work, you know, there's no doubt about that. But it works provided, you know, that management is top class and the weather comes with you. And you can have one without the other and it still won't work. So, but look, for me, Jack, relying on receding alone will be too slow to get the clover established. And it'll be dying out at the farm almost as quickly as it's coming in. Mm. If you're just relying on receding, I should say. So, I mean, look, we've a good few pages on it this week in the paper. I do think it's important. And now is the time to do it if you're going to do it. But, you know, management of it will have to be top class in order to get it in. But like it's grade A students really, Jack, for the oversowing, I think, because you need to be really good at grassland management. And they're the farmers, I suppose, that are interested in clover anyway, to be honest. Like, so they're the ones that are pushing it greater.
Yeah. Weed control, Aidan, on the clover job, is there a couple of options on the weed control, post-emergence weed control?
So there's only one option really for this year, and that's the new spray that's out, the Pro Clover, that's licensed for new reseeds. But I suppose there are options for existing swards, and technically if you're oversowing, it's probably into existing swards. So I'm not sure, is the likes of Eagle and them, are they allowed for oversowing? But you shouldn't have to do post-emergent spray if you're oversowing, Jack, because the field should be clean to begin with. If the field is dirty and has lots of weeds in it, that's one for receding, not for oversowing. So, I mean, the post-sowing weed control is not a big deal for oversowing pastures, a very big deal for your full reseed pastures.
Correct.
And the Pro Clover is your only available option there.
Okay.
For this year anyway. There is talks that some of the older sprays could potentially get relicensed for use. And I suppose that will be welcomed by farmers as well.
I was coming up out of West Cork there, Aidan, and I met a farmer. And he was talking about just the grass had got out of hand. Like, you know, I mean, just the year that was in it, he said, like, jeepers, he said, like, cows are going into very strong covers now, he says. Like, and he says he had something, he mentioned a proportion cut, you know, off the grazing platform, which he said, we never do, you know. So, I mean, he had taken action, but, cows going into strong covers, like.
Yeah, and really, Jack, that's going to kill production now for May and June if that happens. So we've already had a really bad year for milk supply. And the risk that as I see it, is that you're going to have a bad year, a bad May and June for milk supply if cows are going into high covers. So really, it's, you know, taking out more paddocks for silage is going to be the key thing. Now, growth isn't fantastic yet. You know, a lot of that grass that's there was there since early spring. It's growth rates are in between 40 and 50. But like if we get a bit of mildness back in the weather, that's going to take off. We're going to be at 100 kilos a day. That's double demand on many farms. So over the space of whatever, like you're going to double your amount of grass in your farm if allowed happen. So really you need to be... you need to be on the ball in terms of taking out paddocks, and it's taking them out for reseeding and taking them out for silage. So, it like even though that farmer said to you that he cut some of the paddocks, he probably have to go out and cut more of them in order to get the pre-grazing yield back down. And it's those early cutting, even though there's light covers on it, you know, you're talking max 2,000 in many cases, it still needs to be cut because it's the only thing you're going to have to correct it. It'll be good quality bales at least. And I see a few of those light covers cut for silage around the country as well. And I think it's the right thing to do. You know, they're all a nuisance, Jack, and no one wants to do it. But it's important that you get the quality right in front of the cows.
Yeah. Excellent. Big challenge out there on the grazing front. Aidan, you were over with our friends in the Netherlands. Any scandal over there?
Yeah, I was over there a few days ago. I just went over for the day, Jack. Look, sure, a couple of things going on. The weather was awful. I mean, it was really cold. We thought we were having a bad year. It was, the winter coats were on. Weather was cold. There was sleet and snow in parts. And the farmers over there are really at their wits' end for this in terms of this weather. They are not getting the breaks we got in the last week with weather. So a lot of the spring sowing hasn't been done. And I was even talking to a farmer from Germany, and he was saying the same thing. So it's all across that Northwest Europe part is really badly affected by the weather. And it's a couple of things, Jack. It's affecting the cost of spreading the slurry. So those farmers now that are in derogation, we're over 170. So they are still in derogation, but their derogation has been lost. So they're having to export a lot of their slurry. And their issue is that the cost of exporting that slurry has gone up by about 4 or 5 times. It used to be €6 a cubic meter to move the slurry. Now it's 25 and €30 a cubic meter to move the slurry. So it's a huge cost on farms when there's hundreds of, you know, thousands of cubic meters of slurry to be moved because of their stocking rate is set up. So that's one of the things. The other thing I was looking at was this new device, Jack, for enriching slurry. So GIA, who make milking machines and robots and all that, have established this new device. It's a slurry enricher, manure enricher. And it's, look, I don't think it's a solution for everyone. For me, I went over there to look at it because I think it's interesting. It's showing where technology is going. And what if effectively what it does is it uses electricity to charge, I suppose, the nitrogen that's in air to get that nitrogen out of the air and put it into slurry. Now, you might say to yourself, Jack, sure, isn't there enough nitrogen in slurry anyway? And there is, but a lot of it isn't available. So they're claiming that this system will make all the nitrogen that's in slurry available. So currently, only half the nitrogen that's in the slurry is available. So it's going to make all that available, and they're going to add more nitrogen to it as well. So it's a full replacement in that case to chemical fertilizer, because we've got the high nitrogen now, and you also have the high P and K that's already in fertilizer in slurry. So look, it is commercially available currently. There's a good few units in the UK already. There's one going into Northern Ireland, is my understanding, and there's 4 or 5 of them in between the Netherlands and Germany. But the cost of electricity going into it will be a sticking point for many farmers. Like, you know, it does use a lot of electricity. I'm going to write up about it now in the next week or so. But this was located, the farm I was on had an AD plant. So I suppose, and it had a CHP plant attached to that. And it had free electricity basically within electricity anyway. And it had solar panels as well. Now you can run it at nighttime. So if you're on a low, you know, it can be switched on and off whenever you want. So you'll have nitrate, or you'll have if you have a wind turbine or surplus power, it can be used that way. But for me, it was interesting, you know, that these are potentially solutions to a lot of the nitrate problems that we have.
So the pulling the nitrogen out of the air and into the slurry, and then of course you know they don't need the artificial fertilizer. They don't need as much of that, obviously, and can use their own nutrients.
So one of the additional uses there for the slurry that's been produced in these farms. And I suppose the key thing is that if the slurry, you know, could potentially be used instead of artificial nitrogen, and if the rules would allow it, it's one of the ways of overcoming some of the issues around stocking rate. So this is now no longer It's a processed fertilizer, and there is there's a phrase in the that the EU have called Renure, and it's the repurposing of farmyard manures into a new product essentially. So it could potentially have capacity there to overcome some of the issues around the nitrates rules, because we're now no longer limited on organic nitrogen per hectare. This wouldn't be considered an organic nitrogen, even though it's coming from the farm. Bit of teasing.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.
Nice one, Aidan. Looking forward to it. Nice one. Thanks for that. I'll leave it at that for this week. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Martin, Darren, and Aidan. Thanks again for any questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Right, good 1,000th episode podcast this week as a special. So get a listen to that if you have a chance. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.